positive rate is actually 16.4%, which is more than 3 times the 5% recommended range by WHO. And I mean, the past week, the average testing rate is only at 14.5%. Again, more than 3 times more on WHO. So if we are not testing enough, we do not actually see the real disease burden. So this is something very concerning. Of course, many steps are being done to try to address this. And as mentioned by Melissa just now, we are trying to increase our vaccination rate, especially after the promise given by the vaccine minister, YBKJ, that they will send us more stocks of vaccine in order to finish our vaccination drive the earliest in Malaysia in August. I mean, this is, of course, due to the impending elections, but there's much more to be done to increase our rate. Right now, the past week, the average daily vaccination is only about 6,490 daily. We need to push this up to at least 45,000 to 50,000 daily if we want to achieve the target by August.
But Kelvin, help us understand the dimension of infrastructure, because when it comes to looking at the burden that the disease places on the health system, you know, often the headlines talk about ICU beds, people intubated or needing you know, quite a bit of assistance. So could you help us tell us what's going on that score?
I think actually 61% of the cases in Sarawak is mainly in the main urban areas. I'm talking about Kuching, Cebu, Miri and Bintulu. But that said, there is a huge 40% of cases in the rural areas, which is very concerning because we know that the healthcare facilities in the rural areas is lacking. There is not enough facilities for proper quarantine. There is obviously no ICUs in those areas. They have to be transported to the main towns, and that itself in the towns itself is already so filled, so congested. So a lot of these people, they have no choice but to lock them in their longhouses in their rural areas, and with very little monitoring. So just in case, if they, we call it desaturate, more gets more severe symptoms, it's very difficult to transport them from the rural areas all the way to the town to get the necessary medical intervention. So that's something very concerning that we have. And our ICUs are actually full. We are right to the brim. And if we are actually testing more, we are getting almost 80, which for the fact of the matter, not 80% of the cases we are testing are asymptomatic. So there is actually much more that we do not know that we need to cater and we need to address if we want to really get in front of the disease in Sarawak.
Right. So you called for, you know, mass testing, right? Called for more testing in each constituency. And I'm just wondering, you know, you alluded to earlier the logistics and the challenges there. But what else? What are the barriers to achieving more testing? Do we have enough resources to do that for Sarawak?
I think this is where the state government actually has to step in. The state government has boasted of bountiful reserves amounting up to 26 billion. And they should use this to increase increase testing, especially in every constituency. Work together with all the elected representatives. This is an issue bipartisan. And to really target those areas that is needed, every constituency. And from when we do this mass testing, then we can, from the data we receive, we can then go more targeted, more specific, even house-to-house testings. So this has to be improved. This has to come together with the state government.
Kelvin, is there a difference in approach that the government of Sarawak is taking, you know, in contrast to the federal government? Is there a difference in thinking about what's actually happening in the ground, what's necessary, where resources need to be allocated, or are they largely in step?
I think on a medical side, they are very similar to the federal agency, which is the Ministry of Health. So a majority of the medical interventions are similar. What differs is the non-medical decisions or policy decisions. Even what I'm talking about is implementation of different SOPs, implementations of different restrictions, interventions, so on and so forth. So that's where maybe the Sarawak Disaster Management Committee or the SDMC has exerted certain level of autonomy in terms of making such decisions. But that could be good, and of course that could be bad as well.
Could you help us understand what's being done to prepare for, you know, elections that are expected? We don't know when, we don't know what's going to happen, but elections in Sarawak are expected. And I'm just wondering, beyond this, you know, incredibly ambitious target to hit full inoculation by August, what else is being done to prepare the territory for polls?
Sadly to say, not much has been done besides the whole vaccination drive, at least the one that's been announced publicly. I personally have been calling for reforms in terms of the election process itself to facilitate a safe pandemic election. I think one of the proposals that I push is to actually enlarge postal votes even among Sarawakians that is working in West Malaysia, even working in Sabah, so that they do not have to fly back to Sarawak to vote, because that itself may bring the risk of them bringing in, carrying the disease back into the state. So this has to be reformed. And I'm not just talking about those staying outside Sarawak. Why not even take a step further? We allow the high-risk groups, I'm talking about the elderly, those with chronic diseases, comorbidities, to allow to post a vote even in Sarawak itself. So this, in my view, has not been done by the EC. They are just purely putting all eggs into the vaccination basket in preparation for this election. But that itself is risky, because we know with the variants that's out there, and with the vaccine itself is not 100%. So that actually runs a risk that we may see an outbreak if specific reforms are not put into place for the election.
Right, Kelvin, you know, it seems that over the year and with the experience from Sabah, that the Elections Commission has passed itself as a rather unimaginative and blunt organization, unwilling to accept interesting innovations and work in an expedited fashion to institute changes that might in fact make elections safer. I mean, what kind of leverage do members of the parliament from Sarawak or the Sarawak government have on the Election Commission to compel it to actually act in a way that's consistent with the demands of the time and under these pandemic conditions?
That's where I'm very disappointed in the Election Commission. The fact of the matter that Sabah was a big lesson for us. And that should have pushed them to innovate. That should have pushed them to do the reforms that is necessary. The fact of the matter, this postal voting idea did not start just during COVID-19. I myself was pushing it since 2018 because I felt there was a need to help Sarawakians working out of Sarawak to vote postally rather than fly back all the way to Sarawak, especially those in rural areas, because they have to fly to Kuching, take a boat maybe a few hours up to the rural areas, and that's very costly for the people living in rural areas. So that's why postal voting reforms is so important, to remove that obstacle. But now in a pandemic, it's even more important. So I am very disappointed. I mean, as a member of parliament, Parliament is closed right now, we have been pushing. The fact of the matter, the last EC chairman, which is the current speaker, was very open to that reform at that time. But now, sadly to say, it has kind of quieted down, and the current one doesn't seem bothered to take the reforms that is necessary.
Okay, Kelvin, we're definitely going to be focusing on the ways in which EC can innovate, and we'll have that conversation in just a little bit. But I do want to ask you, as an MP, Mosty had actually said it's going to provide all MPs with 20,000 ringgit allocation to promote COVID-19 vaccination, the immunization program. And I'm just wondering, for you and your constituency, what will you be doing with that allocation, and how far will 2,000 ringgit go?
It's 20,000 ringgit, and this was given So my office has already received that. What we have been doing is we have been doing a mobile vaccine registration booths in the major markets, major food centers, or places where the public goes to, especially targeting the elderly and high-risk population. So sometimes to get them to come, we have to be innovative. We provide some form of refreshments for our volunteers, I mean, just mineral water, so on and so forth. But one of the things that I'm doing right now is we are transporting those high-risk and elderly patients, public to the vaccination centers. And so this way, these funds is used to pay for the petrol money for the volunteers that engage and are willing to send these people to this the PPVs. So it has been utilized in such way. Whether it'll be enough is another question. I think on the urban constituency, it may be sufficient. But when we're talking about rural areas, it'll be a bit, maybe a bit stretch for them.
Kelvin, many of us are frustrated with the way in which our institutions are either working or not working, as the case may be, to deal with the current situation. Do you see this frustration on the street? Do you see it among your constituents, among the intellectual or chattering classes of Sarawak, and even the Sarawak government? Are they frustrated with how things have operated? And are they pushing or trying to find ways to catalyze change in the way we approach this pandemic?
I think the public is frustrated. I think the two main frustrations about the public is, of course, the rising cases of COVID-19 and how the so-called SOPs that have been set are not properly enforced, not properly practiced. And that's one of the main frustrations. Number two, of course, the frustrations is towards the slow rate of vaccination in the state. I think this is nationwide itself. And this frustration by the public is not just towards the federal government, but it's also towards the state government, because we have to admit that there were some missteps taken by SDMC, which caused the surge of COVID-19 in Sarawak itself. I mean, I can give you an example. The main cluster that caused the surge in Sarawak at the beginning of the year was due to a lady that was traveling back from Johor Bahru to Sarawak. Based on the SOP set by the state government, anyone coming to Sarawak has to be quarantined for 14 days. However, she was given exempted. She said that she could home quarantine. But the fact is, she home quarantined in her longhouse. And in a longhouse, you know, they don't have distancing, they all congregate together, and that's where it starts spreading. And that cluster itself affected, I think, 17 different villages. I think 20 over people passed away because of that cluster. And since then, it spread like wildfire in the rural areas. So again, there were missteps by both the state and also, of course, the federal government. And that's where it kind of heats up the frustrations by the people. And of course, the confusing, conflicting SOPs is one thing that is the hot topic of the town, especially the past few days, even in Sarawak. You think your SOP in Semenanjung is confusing? In Sarawak, it's even more confusing because we now have to balance the state and the one that is released by Ismail Sabri. So that's two confusing platforms there.
Okay, that was Dr. Kelvin Yee, MP of Bandar Kuching, speaking to us. Now we're going to take a quick break here on Consider This, but more on our focus on Sarawak in just a couple of minutes. Stay tuned.
Itself. Akan maka lebih sukar untuk COVID menjangkit kita.
Untuk tempoh 2 minggu ini duduk di rumah. Kalau kita boleh laksanakan KKP kendiri dan keluarga,
saya kira insyaAllah kita boleh berjaya. Akhirnya kita menang.
Untuk memastikan Malaysia ada ke depan
kita boleh maju.
Induknya adalah Melayu.
Balik kepada sepatutnya orang yang membuat polisi.
Kalau itu yang dikehendaki, fine. Mungkin kita berbeza pandangan.
Tapi kita mempunyai kuasa yang boleh menentukan budaya di masa hadapan.
Polisi yang mesra wanita, kena tentu dia akan datang daripada pemimpin wanita.
Perang COVID-19 masih belum berakhir. Dalam kita berusaha memutuskan rantaian wabak ini, kita jangan terpedaya dengan virus maklumat palsu. Semak fakta melalui www.esraawani.com atau aplikasi Esra Awani. Teruskan berdisiplin, ratakan lengkungan pandemik ini.
The third wave of COVID-19 has taken us by storm. There's no room to take anything lightly. Everyone must follow all the steps to stop the spread of COVID-19, social distancing, face mask, follow these steps, this SOP, with the utmost discipline. Together, we can flatten the curve.
Bila sentuh soal berita, tiada masa untuk tunggu. Kepada anda, kami bawakan fakta, susulan dan kupasan yang terkini. Tiada drama dan tiada pengulangan. Usah tunggu lama-lama. awani 7.45. Lebih awal dari biasa.
Hello. Hello, thanks for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. A computational modeling study done by the National University of Singapore, which was published recently, estimates that the Sabah state election last year had resulted in some 3,000 COVID-19 cases in the first few weeks after polling day, and that it had seeded the third wave of the pandemic. Now, does this mean that elections, like the one Sarawak is expected to have, should be cancelled or delayed? And how do we avoid repeating the same mistakes that we saw made in the Sabah elections? Joining us on the show now is Chairperson of Bersih Sarawak, Anne Thiel. Welcome to the show, Anne. Sarawak will probably be next to hold its elections after Sabah last year. And now we know the repercussions of having polls during a pandemic. But I'm just wondering if you could help us think through how to balance the twin demands for, you know, preserving public health, yet also the need for adherence to the federal constitution and also democratic demands.
Yes, thanks, Melissa and Sharad, for having me. I think this is a balancing act that needs to be done by the decision makers. When I say decision makers, I mean the SPR, the government of the day, and also KKM, you know, in the instance of COVID-19 pandemic. So the big question is, how do we balance the need for public health to preserve, you know, like you mentioned, keep everybody safe, voters, including all election stakeholders. At the same time, the demands of democracy says that we need to have frequent elections, elections at regular intervals. Yeah, that's what we need to do. And in specifically for the case of Sarawak, I think very important question. Government of the day and stakeholders should not push this question aside and say, you know, vaccinate as many people as you can, get herd immunity, and then we can have our elections. Yes, that is planning for it, but at the same time, I don't think that's enough planning towards having elections, or rather our state elections, during a time when, you know, there are still cases going on. What is the trigger point?
Please go ahead. Yes.
My question to the decision makers would be, you know, are you preparing? Are you discussing between the state and SPR? You know, as to what would be the trigger points, you know, what are the trigger points for us to sit down, for us to say, let's have the elections, let's dissolve DUN and have the elections. Because as you know, our DUN has been suspended. Our Dewan Undangan Negeri is not sitting. Elections are not allowed to happen under the emergency ordinance. And therefore, you know, even if comes 1st of August, when the emergency is supposed to end, you know, does that mean on that day itself the Dewan Undangan Negeri automatically dissolves and within 60 days, SPR must call for elections? There is no news to us, the rakyat, on this point. You know, more importantly, as I said, the trigger point, are they making preparations to face COVID-19 elections or not? That's the big question.
And, yeah. And, you know, over the last year or so, you know, many countries have gone to elections, some
exactly.
Reasonably successfully in the sense that it doesn't seem to have triggered a wave. More notoriously, I think the Indian elections did not help the situation there. You know, but then we've had some really good examples. So I'm just wondering, yep. You know, the reassurance that Sarawak will the vaccination process or immunization program will be accelerated for Sarawak in order that it becomes much safer. Does that reassure you? Does it reassure Sarawakians?
No, I think there's still some gaps that no one has given any answers. What about the people that the Sarawakian voters who live and work in West Malaysia? They all have voting addresses back home here in Sarawak, in one of the constituencies, whichever it may be from. And they need to fly back. They need to at least take a flight from wherever they are in West Malaysia or Singapore. As you all know, you know, a lot of diaspora in Singapore as well, a lot of Sarawakian diaspora in Singapore, and other neighboring countries such as Brunei, Sabah, of course, Sabah as well, and other places. But these are the places that, you know, our voters reside, live and work because of the unequal development that we have here. So economic opportunities is lesser. So they live and work over there. But comes election, these guys and ladies have to come back, fly. Are you going to fly when there is this, you know, risking yourself in terms of health to come back to vote? You know, they've not talked about these people there's high people movement when it comes to elections. There's a lot of people moving around during campaign period, during even on the on election day and pre-election day. You know, these are
right.
So people need to move around a lot. And if no preparations are made, then we are going to head into trouble.
Yeah. Exactly. We often forget that, you know, it's not just on polling day, but in the campaign period, in the lead up to polling day as well. And I want to talk to you about, you know, the ability for the EC to initiate any kinds of reforms. Now, even when the Sabah elections were happening last year, even before that, there was so much talk about the need for postal voting. And now I'm just wondering, given that Parliament is not sitting anymore, I mean, what legislative room does the EC have to be innovative, to implement some of these electoral reforms while we are in a state of emergency?
Good question. In terms of postal voting, or rather in-country postal voting, what the SPR could do is, there's one, I forgot to look up the regulation just now, but basically there's one regulation that entitles SPR to expand the category of postal voters, and they could do that, you know, they could do that. We have issued statements on this point already many times to call upon the SPR to expand the category of postal voting to include Sarawakians who reside in these neighboring countries, as well as those who reside in other parts or other regions of Malaysia, to be able to vote by post. Of course, the answer given to us unofficially was that the answer given is that the integrity process needs to be strengthened, and therefore, you know, they are not so interested in implementing this aspect of the expanding the postal vote. So it actually can be easily done without parliament meeting, you know, without Dewan Rakyat sitting by that particular provision.
But it seems to me that, because, you know, even the fact that parliament is not meeting is really a question of political will. There's absolutely nothing in the emergency ordinance that says that parliament cannot meet. And, you know, so it is a singular lack of political will or interest to actually innovate or to change the current system to accommodate the situation, isn't it? I mean, there is nothing stopping them from doing this.
That's what I'll put it down to, because actually they can sit for like 1 or 2 days. I think one of the academicians, Professor Schott, was saying, you know, Parliament could sit for 1 or 2 days and do their business, you know, what they're supposed to do, pass certain laws and things like that. You know, debate on certain things and pass certain laws to cover for the possibility of having COVID elections. I mean, I'm not just talking about Sarawak elections. Thinking about national elections, isn't there a possibility of one happening soon? I mean, if that is the case, then parties got to prepare for it. You know, I mean, stakeholders, especially SPR, need to prepare for it. So this. Something to play with, but you know, this is preserving our rights to vote at the same time keeping us safe. And I'm sure, as right-thinking Malaysians, all of us we want to exercise our democratic rights, choose government. In fact, one of the important things that came up in this period of a worldwide pandemic is that in some countries where they decide to have their elections, voter turnout actually increased. Now, why do you think that happened? One, I mean, very simple answer is that people in those countries feel that having good, strong, accountable government is very important. Therefore, I must go to vote. You know, why did their voter, you know, in times of pandemic like this, their voter turnout increased? You know, of course, there are countries that voter turnout decreased, lah. But,
On that score, sorry, just very quickly, what is the mood on the ground in Sarawak? Are people, do they want to exercise their franchise? Do they want to see a change? Have they had a year to think about the quality of leadership they've had and want to vote on that?
I think generally, I live in the urban area. Generally, people in the urban area do know the importance of, going to vote. This is choosing our state government. Their mandate is obviously expiring on the 6th of June, without the emergency in place. What happens after the 6th of June? Okay, suspended until 1st of August. What's going to happen after 1st of August? I think people are concerned. Quite a lot of voters are concerned. What will happen? What kind of a government are we going to have? You mean the GPS is going to continue? What do we call the GPS government then after the 1st of August if June is not dissolved? You know, is it a caretaker government? Is it a temporary? Is it an interim government? What are its limitations of this kind of government that is, you know, whose term is extended by virtue of whatever emergency ordinance that we have? The mood in the urban areas is, I think, we are generally concerned, but at the same time worried about the infections and why the numbers are not coming down,
right?
And how the authorities are tackling the matter and so on. So yeah.
All right. That was NTO Chairperson of Bersih Sarawak. And that's all we have for you on this episode of Consider This. Thank you so much for watching the show. I'm Melissa Idris.
I'm Gerard Kutin, signing off for the evening.
And we will be back with you same time tomorrow. Till then, good night.